Hello and welcome to another There Are Giants podcast. I am, of course, your host, Roger Munter, and this is always one of my favorite podcasts of the year when I get Jim Callist on to talk a little Giants prospects. We're just after spring training. The MLB pipeline just put out the top 30s not too long ago, so it's great to have a chance to get him on here and talk a little bit about the system. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and we're recording this. It's like the first time in a long time that Kyle Harrison's not our number one prospect because he literally graduated off the list yesterday.
I just pulled up the list because I was going to go into it right at the top, and I noticed he was missing. I'm like, oh, Kyle is no longer a prospect. Keaton Wynn has disappeared.
No, Keaton Wynn's still on there, I think. No, you're right. Keaton Wynn graduated earlier because I think he had more days on the roster. Yeah.
So. It's, you know, well, while we're talking about this, I was going to go in a different direction. But so right now, if I go to MLB Pipeline, the top of your Giants list is Marco Luciano, Wisenhunt, Bryce Eldridge, Walker Martin, Rainer Arias, and then Birdsong, Black, Crawford, Mauya Hunna, and Joe Whitman. That's your top 10. I have to say, given the amount of talent that they have graduated, in the not too distant past, Harrison, obviously last year you had Matos and Bailey and Casey Schmidt, a good amount of talent graduated off the list. It feels like this list is in a pretty good place. You've been doing the Giants list for a long time now. Is that your sense too, that, you know, given the amount of talent that's come off here recently, this is a pretty strong top.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, you got guys like Luciano, and he's still young, but like Luciano, Wisenhunt, and Mason Black have all gotten to AAA. We have a pretty good idea what they are. We're not dreaming on them. And then you've got Hayden Birdsong, who just seems like he keeps getting better. And then you got guys, you know, in the lower levels of the system, you know, Eldridge and Martin and Arias were all signed last year. Reggie Crawford hasn't really gotten going yet. Ahuna and Whitman were signed last year. So you got kind of a balance. The one thing I think they're lacking right now is that kind of in between from the guys at the very top and the guys just coming up. They don't have a wave in between the two, but that's still, I think, a pretty representative top 10. I mean, I know they're very encouraged by Ahuna, who going into last year, you would have thought he might not even make it to the Giants pick at 16. And I thought Joe Whitman was the best college lefty in last year's draft. I still can't believe they got him where they got him. So yeah. And right behind them is Landon Roop, who's in the big leagues, who I think everybody always overlooks because he, you know, doesn't throw 97 miles an hour and he wasn't a high pick, but he's got one of the best curveballs you'll see. So, I think that's a very good point, Roger. For all the guys they've graduated, and, you know, we aren't talking about a team that was, you know, losing 100 games every year. You know, this isn't the A's, not to pick on the A's, where, you know, like they're in perpetual rebuilding mode. You know, they still have some very interesting guys in their system.
I'm going to just say that I'm a guy who's been on Roop for a long time. The first time I saw that curveball at Eugene was the first time I saw him. I became a committed Landon Roop fan. So I'm glad to see the success he's having. I want to start with this group at the top you mentioned, you know, and we always talk about prospects, but of course, prospect is an artificial boundary, as it were. You have this group in Sacramento of Marco Luciano, Luis Matos. You can add Casey Schmidt to that, you know, David Villar, whoever you want. We've been watching them for a long time. Some of those guys are still prospects. Luciano still is. Matos isn't. Schmidt isn't. But it isn't clear what they're going to become at this point. As you look at sort of the careers of particularly Luciano and Matos, do you still see them sort of getting to that starter position player outcome that you've kind of seen for them as they've been coming up through their development?
I do. I mean, I still think there's like kind of a wide variance on Luciano's outcomes where, you know, he could be an all-star who hits 35 plus homers a year, or, you know, he could be a guy who the power's there, but there's swing and miss. And he's, you know, I don't think he's really a long-term shortstop at the big league level. Like, I think you can play him there for a while, but you're going to want somebody with more range. You know, that said, like, it's crazy how quickly he's moved. On one hand, it feels like he's been around forever, you know, because like they signed him back in 18. On the other hand, you know, given the pandemic and given some injuries, he only played 280 games in the minor leagues before he got to the big leagues. Like I felt like they rushed him a little bit. Like, I wasn't too concerned by his big league performance last year, 'cause I didn't really think he was necessarily big league ready. I was kind of surprised he got promoted as quick as he could, but he's still super young. He still has electric bat speed. I do think, you know, I don't think he's necessarily going to be a big walk guy necessarily, but I don't think he's going to be like a horrible strikeout guy. Like I think he'll settle in and make enough contact to do damage. You know, Matos is kind of funny too, because, you know, Matos got off to a great start to his career, you know, tremendous, seemed like he was underrated for a while. They made everybody's top 100 list and started moving up that. And then he was terrible in 2022 and not really good in the fall league, except at games I was at. Like, I was there the first week and he played great. I came back and he was hitting like 220 in the fall league. And then I came back for the final week and I was like, what's going on? And then last year, yeah, you could, I mean, he made it to the big leagues at 21. So I think both those guys got to the big leagues sooner than I would have expected. I mean, if you told me that Matos was going to be there and play 76 games in the majors last year after the year he had 2022, I would have been like, come on, he hasn't played above high A. Did he hit 211? Like, really? But he played really well in the minor leagues. Yeah, I do. I think I'm less convinced he's going to be a star than Luciano. I wonder a little bit how much impact there's going to be. You know, are we going to see 10 home runs? Is it going to be 20? Yeah. I do think he should be able to hit and get on base and those types of things. But yeah, I think I feel reasonably sure that both those guys are regulars.
What is an interesting thing about Giants development the last 2 years, and this isn't necessarily how I think of them, you know, long term, but Luciano, Matos, Bailey, and Schmidt, in terms of games, moved from high A to the major league literally in weeks. They're 28 games for Patrick Bailey between Eugene and the majors, and not much more than that for Schmidt or Matos or Luciano. They really kind of turbocharged all of those guys once they got to Richmond. They went up very fast.
Yeah, and I mean, we may see that with Wisnant too. Like, you know, who's a pitcher, obviously, but yeah, no, it is interesting. You know, Bailey, I mean, I think we kind of saw, you know, what Bailey's going to be in the big leagues. I think he's going to be a premium defender who's, you know, okay offensively. You know, Schmidt's the one I don't have as great a feel for what I think he's going to be. Like,
yeah,
he's older. Like, I was never a huge Casey Schmidt as a offensive performer. You know, we'll just see on that. I'm not sure on that one. Like, he doesn't control the strike zone particularly great.
Yeah.
I think it's average power. I don't know if it's more than that, but you know, it's a weird profile for third base. Like, I think he could give you starter production, Roger, but he'd do it by giving you a ton of defensive value and maybe hit 15 homers and he hits 240, but he's that good a defender. But it's just, you know, when you're looking, if you're playing fantasy baseball or you're looking at the back of a baseball card, you're like, ah, why is this guy playing every day? But he is that good defensively.
Yeah, which you can understand why the Giants have kind of wanted to try and push him towards the middle of the diamond to see if the glove plays there and kind of split the difference of those two sides of his game. Because if he can play second, if he can play short, the bat isn't quite as much of a concern.
He's probably a better shortstop than Marco Luciano. I don't even say probably. I think he is a better shortstop than Marco Luciano.
Yeah. I mean, I think for hands, without a doubt, feet. I do think Luciano still has better range. He's not always as predictable about, you know, what he's going to do with the ball when he gets to him.
Yeah, that gets fair.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing about Luciano Matos ultimately is they've moved incredibly fast despite really variant kind of seasons and success levels of success in the minors. They've got pushed whether they were succeeding or not, which is kind of fascinating to watch. I want to move down to Richmond, the group that I cover a lot, and particularly a couple of guys. You talk about people who've been around for a long time. Hunter Bishop is a guy who has been around for a long time, but not necessarily really around. I actually got to speak with him last week. He's finally healthy and actually looking quite good from what I saw him in the spring. And just the swings he's taking look good. He and Carson Ragsdale are two guys that we've kind of, as Giants fans, been waiting to see be healthy and productive on the field. And there's just been sort of one frustration for them after another. I guess as tales of perseverance, What do you hope to see from guys like this? Once you get back on the field and start to see some reps, see the athleticism in Bishop's case, the stuff in Ragsdale's case, start to be there for a year. Can you start to get excited about guys like that again after years of sort of kind of difficulties on the health side?
I don't know. Like Hunter Bishop's tough. Like super nice guy. I remember talking to him in the fall league 3 years ago now. And he was coming off like an injury filled season, which is the state of his career. Like I'm looking at his stats here. You probably know this, Roger, but I'm going to ask you in case you don't. The guy was a 2019 first round pick. And we know he lost a year of the pandemic. How many minor league games has he played?
You know, he asked me this the other day. I think it's like 230.
No, it's 136.
130.
He hasn't even played a full season. Like if he played every day, he has not played. Like it's a shorter season now, but he has that. Like that's crazy. Like so. Anyway, what I was gonna say with Hunter is tremendous physical ability. I have not seen him since the fall league, so I don't know what the physical ability looks like now. He didn't play all last year. He's been injured so much. The one season where he played 86 of his 136 games, he hit 233, even though he was old for A ball, and he struck out a bunch. I feel like with Hunter Bishop, if he gives you something, it's a bonus. Like I wish him success. Super nice guy. Nobody deserves the amount of injuries he's gone through, but like, no. It's just hard to count on him at this point. He's 26 years old. So I ranked him for however many years on the top 30. And I'm at the point now where he's old. I mean, he's still, you know, he's 26 in double A. That's really old. So like I will say if he stays healthy, the physical ability was tremendous, so he might have more upside than your typical 26-year-old in double A. And this is the first time he's been in double A too. He's never played above high A, so it's like it's crazy how much he's been hurt. So I don't know about him with Ragsdale. Like I don't think age matters as much for pitchers, and it's interesting because I got really excited about him after 2021. He had a nice year. He came over. I can't remember what the trade was. Like who the Giants give up for him? Do you remember?
Sam Coonrod, I believe, is who that deal was.
Okay, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I want to say he was on that low-A West team that had like 8,000 strikeouts. He led the league in strikeouts. He had a really good curveball. He's big. He's got, you know, his body is 6'8", and it creates extension. And, like, it was really encouraging. He threw a decent amount of strikes. He was a former – and I felt like he had upside too, because he was a former two-way player at college, who was first baseman slash reliever. So he hadn't even pitched a lot. Like, so that was 2021. So I was like pretty excited by him, and he was 23. And then I've lost track of everything that's happened to him. I know he had thoracic outlet surgery at one point, and
that wiped out 2022. Yeah.
He pitched six innings in 2022 and 28 innings last year. And now he's back in Richmond. I do think with pitchers, like, again, you always need pitching. I don't think age matters. You sometimes, I mean, he had stuff. Like, but sometimes guys, you know, discover a pitch when they're 28 years old. So I do still think there's something there. He intrigues me. Like, I'm not quite the point where I'd rank him on the top 30 list yet. I'd like him to pitch and stay healthy for a few months. But I could definitely see that if he does that, that when we update the list at midseason, that I'd potentially rank him if he was having success in double A. Because I do think, like, I'm not, like, this isn't groundbreaking knowledge, but, like, you look at the guys who have, like, there's a lot of guys in the big leagues have success. It's because they have a lot of extension. Like, you think all these Astros guys were unheralded. Ronel Blanco is, like, 6 feet tall, and he gets a ton of extension. Like extension matters. And Carson Ragsdale creates it. He's 6'8". So you're already going to have extension. But like it just seems like he releases the ball closer to home plate than almost anybody. And that plays. Like it really plays. So I think, you know, maybe he's only a reliever in the long run. It's just hard to say because he's pitched one full season and he was drafted in 2020. But maybe he's only a reliever, but I could see him being a useful reliever. So I just think it's easier to come back from years of inactivity and lost at bats or innings as a pitcher. So I actually do probably have more faith in Carson Ragsdale than most.
Every time I see him, I get excited about him because I've seen him. So I saw him in San Jose. I saw him on the complex after Thoracic Outlet. I saw him in Eugene last year and he was phenomenal. And then he was just gone. So it's always this tease, but just an incredibly talented guy and a huge, huge person. All right. Well, I want to move down to now the younger guys that you mentioned. I feel like most people, and I know, I believe that you were one of the people who would, at the time of the draft last year, was very high on what the Giants accomplished. As you say, they got a lot of great values. Bryce Eldridge in particular, you know, they got him where he was supposed to go, but it seems like his reputation has really kind of skyrocketed in the less than a year since then. What's the difference for you between kind of who Bryce Eldridge is right now as we look at him in San Jose, and who people kind of thought he was or looked at him as being going up into the draft last July?
You know, I don't know that he's really that different a player. I think the difference is, it's a little bit silly, but like he played like a month between rookie ball and low A, and he hit, what was it? I've lost track. 6 homers in 31 games against older competition and drew a bunch of walks. And that's just more real than seeing him do it against high school competition. He actually went to my arch rival high school. So I'm predisposed to dislike Bryce Eldridge because he went to James Madison High. I saw him at the combine. I told him that. So I don't know that he's so much different. Like, I do think kudos to the Giants for, I'll sermonize here for a second. I know he wanted to try playing both ways and he was interesting. Yeah. He had a lot of success with TBUSA as a pitcher. He had an ankle injury last year, so he was kind of limited as a pitcher last year. 100% right decision. Don't fool around with the pitching. It's too hard to do both. Even if you can do both, the odds that you're going to be equally proficient, like from a development standpoint at both, like what happens if his hitting's better than his pitching and he's ready for high A as a hitter, but he's struggling as a pitcher? Like, it's just too much. It's too hard. Like I blame Shohei Ohtani. Makes it look like, oh, this is easy. It's really, really hard. There's a reason why teams weren't doing this for a year. Like the only other, like, I think a Brendan McKay went 4th overall and he was big league ready, but he wasn't hitting in Double-A. Big league ready as a pitcher. And I don't know that like doing two things got him hurt, but like you're not focusing on one or the other. It's just tough. So anyway, I like the fact that Bryce Eldridge is only going to hit. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting because they played him in the outfield last year.
Yeah.
And I thought he was, I mean, I don't think he was great, but he wasn't brutal. And then this year it's just like, no, we're not messing around. He's just playing first base. So it's like, I don't know if it was, I didn't ask this specifically. If the no pitching, no outfield, it's just like, this guy's bat is so good. Let's just not fool around, which is, I actually think, a smart decision. It's like when you have the offensive-minded catchers, like your Kyle Schwarbers, and you're like, oh, we're going to try to make him into a catcher. And it's like, well, you're going to take away from his bat, and it's going to take long. I think they're just looking to get, like, I'm not saying he's going to be in the big leagues next year, but I think his bat potentially is that special. I mean, he's 6'7". He crushes the ball. He hits the ball harder than most players in the minor leagues, even though he's young. And he's got some feel for hitting. Even though he's big, the swing isn't egregiously long. And I think they're just looking to get him to the big leagues. Like not rush him, but like, let's not throw on all this other stuff. Let's just focus. The reason we drafted him, he's got great power and a potentially pretty good bat. Let's just focus on that, which I like. I think that makes sense.
I know they really like his swing decisions, his command of the strike zone too. I he has so much power the opposite way that it looks to me like he can wait a long time on pitches before he has to make a decision. He doesn't have to, you know, get out there and get in front of the plate, like they say. And that really plays into his strong swing decisions, it looks like to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think the other thing that I like, again, this isn't groundbreaking, but it's something I look for. He, like these guys with huge power, like Eldridge, a lot of times, well, they'll say like, oh, I have huge power. I'm going to hit the ball 500 feet. But like what you want, and Bryce does this, is Bryce knows, like you were talking about his opposite field power. Bryce knows he can hit the ball out of any part of the park. So instead of going up there, like I'm going to crush the ball, he just looks to make good contact and figures the home runs are going to come. And we saw that in his pro debut. So, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this to you earlier. I was telling somebody, we did our preseason top 100 prospects list. We like the quick version of how we do it is Sam Dykstra and Jonathan Mayo and I each have our own. We do like a top 125. We mash them together in a spreadsheet. Then we discuss it. And then we get feedback from probably 30 or 40 people in pro ball, like scouting, you know, pro scouting directors, assistant GMs, that type of thing. And we repeatedly heard Bryce Aldridge did not make our original first draft. And we heard from enough people. They're like, you should have him on the list and move him up. Not just that we have him. I don't have the rankings in front of me, but like we did get him on the list. But like it was interesting, like you were alluding to, teams seem to like him even. But it's funny. It's not just him. It's all the guy. There was three of the four picks in a row. Like you had Matt Shaw to the Cubs at 13, Kyle yeah. Teal to the Red Sox at 14, and Bryce Aldridge to the Giants at 16. Everybody's raving about these guys. It's like, well, why didn't you draft them higher? Like, yeah, I mean, the Cubs and the Red Sox and Giants aren't complaining, but like we got so much feedback on those three guys. Like we had Shaw and Teal were on our first draft, but it's like, you guys have these guys way too low. You need to move them up. And you know, I think, you know, we may talk more about the rest of the Giants draft. I think the Giants had a really good draft, and it could be one of those deals where we look back 5 years from now. It's like, why did Bryce Eldridge last until pick 16?
I feel like I have to ask you what your high school was that Bryce was at your arch rival.
There's two high schools in Vienna, Virginia. He was at James Madison, and I was at Oakton High School.
Oakton.
I grew up in Oakton. Well, I forgot you're in the area.
I used to run around the Oakton football field because it was in our backyard. Basically, that's where we lived before we moved downtown.
So wait a minute. So do you live in like the housing development that was behind the back of Oakton?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So when I went to school there, my senior year, like it was a closed campus, but I had a friend who parked in that neighborhood, and we would look around, run out the back of Oakton, climb the fence, get in his car, go to Roy Rogers for lunch, unbelievable roast beef sandwiches, and then drive back to school, park, and then work our way back in.
Yeah, it was 100 yards from our front door to the football stadium. Okay, that's probably not interesting to anybody but you and me. But
and Bryce, if Bryce is listening to the podcast, he's gonna smile.
Well, so let's move to the second guy in the pick, Walker Martin, who we're still kind of waiting to see his pro debut. And I don't know if that was surprising to you. Were you at all surprised that he got left back and extended this year to start what would be his first full season?
Maybe a little, like he hasn't played yet. It's weird though. This year's different because the Arizona Complex League is going to start in May
start early
and not in late June. So if you want it, like I can see, we might see more of this where you take a high school guy, especially he didn't debut last year like Bryce did. Let Walker go to the Complex League for 2 months and then spend the second half of the season in single A. So I think we may see teams do that more with high school players, especially because the draft's so late and they sign so late, they don't often get to play. But yeah, I guess I was a little, you just naturally assume, okay, he's drafted last year. But I think the fact that he didn't make his debut probably played into that.
So did you get to see any of Martin in spring? What's just your,
I did. I didn't go to Scottsdale this year. Like I spent, instead of doing 10 days in Arizona, I did 5 in Florida, 5 in Arizona, or 5 camps, 5 and 5. And then I was going to, it was all lined up perfectly in Mesa on day 2 of spring breakout. I was broadcasting Cubs and White Sox, but they were playing early because they weren't part of a big league game. And then I was going to go, if it was only 7 in a game, it was conceivable because the Giants and A's were also playing in Mesa. I was going to see that whole game. I was just going to drive 10 minutes over. And I assumed I would have seen Walker Martin in that game, but it rained that day. So we didn't.
Yes, it did.
So it was very unfortunate.
I had tickets to that game. I should say, this is another little detour. The spring breakout just concept was brilliant. And even though I know some of the ones in the Valley succumbed to weather, I hope the response to it was strong. And that's something we're going to see again in the future, because I think it created a lot of positive buzz towards young players in the industry.
I think MLB is very much in favor of it. I think the logistics, I mean, there was a lot of logistics involved, but I think most teams, I wouldn't say all teams, but most teams were fairly enthused about it. It was a good exposure for the players. It was actually, like, it's funny. It was created They have a thing at MLB called Content Con where you have teams come up with ideas. And my boss, Jason Ratliff, that was his idea.
Oh,
Like,
wow.
I was not involved at all, but Jason was. And it was one of those things, like, so when it was picked, it's like, okay, let's see if we can make this happen. A couple of years ago, it was like, cool idea, but logistically, how are you going to pull this off? And they did. And I do think, I mean, I'm on a podcast. I realize people are listening. Nothing's official. I do think eventually they would like to have more games. I think they'd eventually like to have all the games televised. But I think the ultimate goal, and it's not going to happen in like a year, would be that you would have a tournament. Now, I don't know that you can really have the Arizona winner play the Florida winner, because where are they going to meet in Texas, like in the middle of spring training? But I do think you'd have like you could have like a single elimination tournament. You'd have an Arizona champion and a Florida champion, where single elimination. So the most games you'd play is four. Theoretically, you might play two game back-to-back days of games, and then back-to-back games a week later. And they've even talked about incentivizing, like if you won the tournament. I don't know if it would happen if you'd have two separate tournaments, but they've talked about incentivizing it that if you won the tournament, you'd get a pick at the end of the first round,
Oh, wow.
or international bonus pool money, or you like, which be and so. But then it's funny because I ran that by some people. Hey, I was talking to the Giants with it, and we were talking about this year, and I was like, and like, I think everybody kind of heard when this presented to teams that they want to eventually make this a multi-game event, a tournament. But people hadn't really heard this first round pick incentive. And most people I talked to are like, ooh, like that's interesting. And I was joking with the Giants. I was like, well, then what you would have seen was instead of Kyle Harrison making a start in big league camp, it's like, Kyle,
Hey, come on down.
you're pitching because he's eligible. You're pitching in spring breakout. Like, yeah, Marco Luciano, you're not, I know you're trying to make the Giants, but you're going to bat third in this spring breakout game. So I don't know like how long it would take to get to that point. But getting back to your original question, like it is something MLB is very interested in, and there was a lot of positive response. And I honestly think like for most of the writers I talked to who were covering it was kind of like a refreshing break for a day from like normal, like the, at that point you've been in Arizona or Florida probably for 4 to 6 weeks. And it's like, it's something different. And like the players kind of like the idea of getting to pitch and the games, most of the games were almost all the games were televised in one form or another. But yeah, you'll see more of that. I don't know if we'll get, like, I would think if we eventually work to that tournament setup, you do it in stages. We wouldn't just go from one game to four. And I don't know if we'd get two spring breakout games next year. Like, none of this has been decided, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm dropping hints and like, but at some point, I think they would go from one to two, to then two games over 2 weeks, rather than just go from, hey, we played a single game, now we're doing a tournament.
That is very cool. Because I know the logistics have got to be just brain-numbingly difficult. So it's great to see there's so much buy-in around the industry. Okay, well, let me move back to our original. I do want to talk about Maui Ahuna. You ranked him very aggressively up in the top 10. You wrote in your write-up that he had added 20 pounds of muscle when he came to camp, and I saw him in camp, and I'm like, my God, where did he put it? Because he is, I mean, he's an extremely sort of felt kind of wiry, strong look guy. But he also didn't have the, when I was watching him hit, he doesn't look like he's got this steep upward bat path that people talked about going into the draft. I know the Giants thought that he got into maybe some bad habits in Tennessee. But what can this guy be? What's the dream on Maui Ahuna other than a Hawaiian major leaguer, which is always fun.
The dream, I think, and I got this from the Giants. This was not me originating, but like the parallel the Giants make is Brandon Crawford. Very similar, was a guy who had started in college, came into his draft year. People were talking about him going the upper half of the first round, has a bad spring, drops to the fourth round. And then we know, Brandon Crawford became a three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glover, won a couple World Series. And Ahuna's kind of a similar profile. Like he transferred from Kansas to Tennessee. He didn't play the first couple weeks of season. It wasn't anything he did. Like he, when he tra- you, when you bring it, when the guys get entered the transfer portal, you can't bring him in for a visit until you get his transcript from his school. And apparently Tennessee brought him in without having to train. Everybody knew this issue existed, but it didn't ever got rectified. And so, like, on the eve of the season, NCAA is like, well, he's not cleared to play. Like, Tennessee had eventually suspended his coach for a couple games. I think he suspended himself, actually. Then Mallett was allowed to play. And then he had a back injury, and then he tried to do too much at the plate. But, like, he's potential gold glove shortstop, like Brandon Crawford, could be 15 home run guy. I don't know if I'd say 20, but it's sneaky power. You know, I don't think this guy has to hit for, like, we're not asking this guy to hit 275 to be a valuable big leaguer. But yeah, it's like the Giants officials have been around for a while, kind of say that it kind of reminds them of the Brandon Crawford story.
I mean, the interesting thing about Brandon is that he really turned himself into a major league hitter at the major league level. He, other than like a month in San Jose, right at the beginning of his career, he didn't have much success as an offensive player in the minors. It's really, his glove was so good that he had time to work on it and develop over a matter of years. And he turned himself into the player he was really at the major league level, which is, you know, the hardest thing in the world to do. I'm running us out of time, but before I leave here, I want to talk to you about Reggie Crawford, another guy who's had trouble staying on the field. The tools are just jaw dropping, but we just haven't seen much of him. And I keep watching him and wondering how long before they think maybe we can just turbojet this guy as a reliever, because at this point, the process of building him up to kind of starter level workload seems kind of daunting, doesn't it? I mean,
it does. Well, he's never done it. Like he's literally never done it. I mean, he has a lat strain, I think, right now, right? So he's sidelined.
He's coming back from it. Yeah.
Before he's ready. But like the crazy thing is, so going back to his freshman year of college, which was 2020, and you may know the answer to this one. How many innings did he pitch from 2020 to 2023 in game action, including Team USA, Cape Cod League, minor leagues, Connecticut? How many innings do you think he pitched in 4 years?
Okay, if we're counting Connecticut, which I think is 8, and I think last year, 2023, was 19. And
you gotta get the Cape and Team USA.
There's some
too.
Cape Cod and Team USA. Like, it's less than 50. I'm pretty sure it's like 40 something.
39 and a third. So, yeah. So, you know, and he got hurt. I think it was an oblique late last year, so he couldn't pitch in the fall league. He wound up just hitting. But yeah, I agree. Like you like to dream on him as a starter, but he's never done it. He's never really pitched for much length of time. And you know he's got a fastball that reaches 100. He's got extension. His heater explodes. He's got a mid-80s slider. It's devastating two-plane depth. Like, he does have a changeup. And I think the stat was he threw 43 changeups last year, and the opponent ops was 0-0-0. Like, I mean, I don't know how many of them ended at bats. But, like, yeah, I mean, and you might be getting to that point pretty soon, too. Like, off the top of my head, I think he's 40-man. When does he have to go in the 40-man after –
Well, he's a 2022 guy, right? So yeah, he's still got another year.
Yeah, but like, I don't think he's gonna. Yeah, I think we're getting to. I think you're at the point, and because this year, even if he stays healthy all year, like you're probably topping him out at 75 innings at most,
at best. Yeah.
So they're probably. My guess is that's a conversation they probably have to have very seriously after this season. Like start this year just to get him regular work, but we haven't seen any evidence he can hold up as a starter.
I mean, in a sense, that's kind of what they've done with Landon Roop this year, who barely pitched last year, 30 innings last year, but the stuff's so good. They're like, well, we can't waste this stuff. Let's start using it. And he's looked good in the major league level. Okay. I just have a few more minutes. I want to ask you if you just a favorite sleeper of yours in the system, somebody maybe low in your rankings or off your rankings that you have good feelings about moving up in the next year.
Yeah, well, I guess he's a sleeper because he's brand new, but I kind of like what I've heard about this Johnny Level kid they signed in January. Like, it's super easy to get excited about his international guys because, like, I've never seen him play. Like, he just signed. He'll be in the Dominican Summer League this summer, but like switch hitter. He's got really good bat speed with some loft. So, you know, he's not a big guy. Could be 15 to 20 homers, quick twitch, solid plus speed, shortstop action, strong arm. Like, so anyway, I mean, I know why people aren't talking about him because he hasn't made his pro debut yet. And he wasn't like he signed for, you know, $1 million minus a $2,500 contingency bonus. It wasn't like he was this big ticket signing.
Right.
But he kind of intrigues me. How about you? Who's your favorite Giants sleeper?
Oh, goodness. That is a great question. I wasn't prepared for you to ask me. I do really like Carson Ragsdale. So,
he's a good one.
When I sent my list around, I got a few people saying you should push him up. And I'm like, even with the injury, I'm like, yeah, the talent's still there. So he is pretty high on my list. Are there other guys who I really like what I've seen from them? I know when I ask Kyle Haynes, the answer is always everybody.
I got a good one for you. He's not on our list.
I got to look at my top 50.
I got one because we only go 30 deep, Roger. We didn't go 50 deep. I really like Josh Bostic in last year's draft. I thought he was like a super deep JUCO sleeper. And it was funny because I had one scout who really, really liked him. And like JUCO guys don't get scouted super effectively because you run around doing a million things. And I wasn't sure. I was like, like we put him on our draft 250. We put him at 176. And I was like, maybe I went too high. Maybe I'm overstating. I read too much. I just had a really good scouting report from one guy on him. I was like, we'll throw him toward the end of the list. And then, like, not that I did it demonstrably, but when the Giants took him in the eighth round, I did like a little fist pump under the desk while we were doing day two of the draft. I was like, yeah, Josh Bostic, somebody else, the team's on him. But like, this guy hasn't pitched a whole lot. He's like super athletic, 3 junior colleges in 3 years. He was a shortstop. And then he was like 2 more junior colleges. So 3 junior colleges, 3 years. He averaged 15.3 strikeouts last year. He's 6'4", 91, 97 with good carry. The slider's promising. Changeup is inconsistent because he hasn't thrown a lot, but it's coming along. Like he's I don't want to say he's raw, but he's not polished. But at the same time, like he's inexperienced, he's athletic. I think he's really interesting. So he's of guys who aren't on my top 30 list, it's definitely Josh Bostic, who will be our next guy on our list whenever another Giant graduates.
Okay, I got one for you, even though I'm going to run out of time here in 90 seconds. Liam Simon.
Good one.
He went under TJ last year, but he's going to be back, you know, mid-season. Just electric stuff he was showing last year, and he was throwing strikes too. So I can't wait to see what he looks like when he comes out this side of TJ. Jim, I can't thank you enough. I know you're just barely out of spring training, and now it's draft time. I appreciate you taking a little bit out of your time to talk Giants prospects with me. It's always one of the highlights of my year.
Well, I always enjoy it, Roger. It's very kind. I enjoy talking to you. You're the stuff you do for Giants fans is amazing. Giants fans should consider themselves lucky that somebody covers the system like you do, and you always ask great questions. It's always fun. And I don't think I knew that you lived behind Oakton High School until now. I knew Northern Virginia, but I hadn't realized that you lived behind Oakton High School.
That's right. Well, I appreciate the kind words, and hopefully we'll see you at a ball field soon, Jim.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you, Roger.